You're listening to Money Never Sleeps Radio. In your face.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
Oh, have I got your attention now?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
You know what I mean?
Money to be made in a place like this.
Money never sleeps, pal.
You're crazy. Don't run when you lose. Don't whine when it hurts.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
It takes brass.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
All right, welcome to Money Never Sleeps. This is the show where we talk about anything and everything that impacts the flow of money from around the corner to around the world. And I want to thank you for joining us today. The topic for today is going to be the private credit markets. We've seen a lot of things going on in this space. We've heard a lot of comments from the likes of J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon. He's talking about private credit markets, coming undone. Look, you know, transparency in the private credit markets, that's a missing component, okay, in this whole spectrum of what's happening, because there's been a private credit market expansion over the past couple of years. We have a lot of the private equity players involved, and, you know, they figure, because it's collateral-based, that it's a safer proposition. But, you know, there are things going on. But I want to go over a few of the aspects of the private credit markets, because the global private credit market itself is undergoing its very first true stress test since it evolved from it just being a niche alternative strategy. This is a multi-trillion dollar part of the financial markets. People don't realize it. What was once marketed as flexible, relationship-driven lending outside of traditional banking. You know, you can't get the funding from a traditional bank, then you go to the private credit market. That's like you couldn't borrow from a bank, so you go to a loan shark to get a loan. All right, not saying that private credit markets are loan sharks. I'm just giving you an example of what it entails. You have recent events that have been transpiring that basically are showing how fragile this is. You know, in the United Kingdom, they brought some of these issues into sharp focus. This is not a theoretical concern. This is not a theory of what could happen. It's stuff that's happening. So it's a definite measurable market failure. And that stuff needs to be corrected in order to stabilize the private credit markets. You know, look, it has expanded over the past decade as banks retreated from certain lending activities following, post 2008, okay, where, you know, the regulatory reforms came in after the collapse. That was pretty much created from derivatives and the like, you know, and we're not going to get into that on this show, really, but I want to focus on the private credit markets. Capital migrated towards private lenders, you know, offering bespoke financing structures and faster execution as opposed to waiting, you know, to go through the whole process, 2 months, 3 months, whatever the case may be. They can get this stuff done in days if need be, if they're comfortable. The assets under management in the private credit space, you know, look, they've been ballooning. And institutional portfolios are increasingly relying on this asset class for yield generation and diversification. And this, you know, look, the growth has outpaced the infrastructure. Fact. Okay, the private credit market within itself could be a great vehicle. But if the infrastructure is not keeping pace with what is happening in general, then you're going to have a problem. It's like building a city on quicksand. At some point in time, you know, houses are going to start falling. Things are going to start collapsing. And unlike the public markets where disclosure, clearing, custody, you know, reporting frameworks, so on and so forth, all that is standardized, private credit still relies heavily on bilateral documentation, basically. You know, they're manually verifying that you have these assets, and if they're reporting them, who are they reporting them to? They're reporting them to themselves, and really, they're not dealing with anyone outside. And regulators and market observers, they have repeatedly warned, and this is where it was, you know, from Jamie Dimon's perspective, what he was actually talking about. They warned that opacity and loosened underwriting standards, basically, it can create a lot of hidden risk beneath the strong headline returns. It can be a problem, okay? And a lot of those warnings, they came to light this year. You know, a major disruption emerged with the collapse of the UK bridging lender, Market Financial Solutions, MFS. It triggered exposure across multiple global financial institutions. Court proceedings and reporting, they brought out these allegations that the same property assets, and you're going to love this, those same assets that were used as collateral, they were pledged multiple times to secure different loans. Basically, it's saying, hey, you know, I have $100 million or whatever, $100 million in assets. I need this loan from you, Joe Bank, from you, Tim Bank, from you, John Bank, and you're getting the same type of loans and basically encumbering those assets, you know, 1, 2, 3 times. That's the equivalent of going out there and having one home and mortgaging this, you know, between 10 different banks all at the same time. You know, this is a level of fraud, right? Now, are they calling it that? I really don't know. But I just see things as they are. You know, they call it double pledging. I call it, you know, you're doing something really screwed up. And you have groups that will try to do that, I guess, if they can get away with it, they can't get caught because the transparency is there. But as I go through this show, you're going to see how that can be changed. Okay, the consequences in that scenario was immediate. You know, over $2 billion in lending exposure became entangled across banks and credit funds and so on and so forth. Major institutions from Barclays and some structured credit lenders and private capital providers, they were pulled into restructuring proceedings, basically trying to fix this thing, right? Judges, what did they do? They cited evidence suggesting this the collateral verification failures within that lending chain. Again, you know, who's manning the house? Who's confirming that, hey, these assets are pledged only for this loan? They weren't doing that. That's what allowed for this double, triple, quadruple pledging. And that's something, again, that needs to be corrected. You know, basically, when you have, you know, multiple lenders that think that they have senior claims on an asset and that's double, triple, quadruple pledged, you know, how senior is that? You know, things go the wrong way. How senior is that claim? Okay, then you have court proceedings. This stuff can last for years and years and years. You know, and this stuff happened. And again, it all happened because the verification process is off-chain, right? It's using, you know, archaic systems, fragmented, trust-based. It's like handshake type of deals, okay? And honestly, this should be mathematically enforced, I believe, okay? The structural problem, collateral is right now exists in silos. Now, this is traditional private credit. This is what it relies on. Spreadsheets, custodial attestations, legal representations, periodic audits, and delayed reporting cycles. Right? That means that every lender sees only part of the truth. They don't see the whole picture. How can they? If they have no access to the entire truth. So there's not one, you know, there's no single ledger that confirms all of this, whether it's collateral that's pledged already. You know, how do you know it's not pledged for something else? How do you know that something is not encumbered by another deal? You know, how leverage evolves in real time, really? You know, how do you gauge this with the private credit markets? It's a little difficult. Okay, and then again, the encumbrances, you know, if the reporting is not there, okay, or if they're reporting the same thing across a bunch of different groups, you know, at the end of the day, they got the money already. So at some point in time, if they don't pay this back in short succession, what's going to wind up happening is going to be revealed, and ooh, boy, somebody's going to be in trouble. Okay, so that's part of the big. I'm going to say that's probably the biggest part, the biggest problem that they have there. Now, digital credit note tokens. I've spoken about this plenty of times. You know, something that was created to go and resolve an issue in the bond market. Okay, but it actually resolves an issue perfectly in the private credit market. You know, it's a structurally different approach when these are used. Okay, because it is used in a certain way where it's collateralized by a locked digital asset treasury. And these digital asset treasuries, if you have real world assets that are locked into these treasuries, it prevents that double pledging. It's a singular event. And everything is on chain. Everything is exposed. So if a company has their assets pledged for a loan, and now they're going to try to get another loan, all they need to do is just look on chain. Look on chain. If they know that there's public information saying, hey, these assets are pledged for something else, they can probably save themselves a lot of headache and prevent that fraud. You know, we don't like that happening, because what it does, it kind of shakes up markets. But then again, maybe in this case, maybe the private credit market needs to be shaken up in order for it to be stronger and better, because you have a lot of institutions out there that have the ability to do a lot of business, and you have a lot of companies that can't really go to traditional markets. But what's happening now, the banks are getting a little leeway, and they're able to get involved in the private credit markets, and that helps to boost their revenue and their earnings, you know. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, you have to have transparency. You have to have transparency, okay? You know, so what can happen here? See, in traditional private credit, these are the structural differences between a digital credit note, which is a DCN, and what is traditionally used in private credit. And this is how this correlation came to be, because it does make a lot of sense. Private credit, collateral recorded in legal documents. So you have lawyer B, lawyer A, everybody just with legal documents, right? Verification occurs periodically, maybe every quarter or whatever the case may be. It isn't consistent. Okay, you have multiple ledgers that exist at the same time. So it's like having two, three sets of books, right? And again, double, triple, quadruple pledging is possible with that structure. Now, let's talk about the DCN plus DAT architecture. That's a digital credit note token and a digital asset treasury architecture, how this works out and how this helps the private credit markets. Collateral, locked on chain, period, the end. The encumbrance is recorded and it's immutable. You can't lie about it. All right. You have a single source of truth that exists, not multiple, one. And good luck with trying to double pledge. Not even technically it's possible. That's an impossible thing, because this is mathematically enforced. So once assets are locked into a digital asset treasury, they cannot be simultaneously pledged anywhere, because the transferability and encumbrances are governed by blockchain. The system replaces trust with deterministic validation. You know the old saying, trust but validate. You know, this right here, or trust but verify. You know, this right here takes trust, verification, puts it in one bundle, and you don't need to trust a human being. Just trust the data. You trust the data, you win. You protect yourselves. Okay, and this is the reason why that double or triple pledging cannot occur in this DAT framework that is set with the DCN. This is what it is. Okay, immutable collateral locking. Assets are assigned to DCNs, and they're locked in with keys and everything. They're bound by a smart contract. They cannot be rehypothecated without this being publicly known. Institutions, well, they, you know, they get specific vault segmentation. Each institution operates as a segregated treasury environment. eliminating that Cross County, Cross Counterparty, murkiness. Okay, and then look, every lender, you know, they see the collateral status. They see it as visible. So if it's encumbered in real time, they see it. They see it simultaneously rather than Joe seeing it today and then Jane seeing it in a month. They see it at the same time. And the beauty of the DCNs, along with that, you know, you're talking about continuous monitoring. And basically, you know, there are about 200 plus on-chain data points. You're talking about transparency, you know, from collateral valuation updates, issuance timestamps, lien seniority, liquidity ratios, treasury inflows and outflows, you know, leverage metrics, you know, covenant triggers, wallet provenance tracking, all this stuff can be programmed in there. Okay, so that transparency shifts from that quarterly reporting to a second-by-second recording of stuff. Now, go figure that. How much transparency is there? And now if you have a DCN, a digital credit note token, that has the ability to distribute a yield in yield tokens every hour on the hour, that gives further, you know, clarity to the lender. They're getting them, and the issuer, they need to redeem those on either quarterly or semi-annually, whatever the case may be, however they set everything up. But the point of the matter is the lender has transparency, and that actually protects them. That protects them, that protects their investors, and it should bring that level of trust to the table. And that's the purpose of a DCN with a DAT, combination. Okay, and that's the great thing about it. You know, and then, you know, why really think about it? Why does this really matter now? As I said earlier, it matters now more than ever. Private credit, they're entering into what many analysts describe as a first major cyclical test. Okay, the scrutiny is coming fast and furious around the underwriting standards and that transparency is an issue. Okay, what happened in the UK, that demonstrates what the reality. Okay, because the next evolution of credit markets will not be driven by yield. It'll be driven by verification, because you know something? You can go and have a private credit deal and looking at your big yield, but if it's not verified properly, you as the lender, oh boy, you can have a problem if something is double pledged and you don't know about it for 6 months or a year. And then when something happens, then all of a sudden it comes to light. And then what? Then to your investors, you don't look too good. Okay, you know, and look, at the end of the day, the you have investors. They're not only asking what the return is. They're asking, you know, are we safe? Can this collateral that is for this loan be independently proven in real time? The answer with the DCN is yes, yes, and yes with that infrastructure put in. Okay, and at the end of the day, the future, and I'm saying this now and Money Never Sleeps, the future of the private credit market will be on chain. There's no question. Institutional digital credit infrastructure is going to be in place and is there now, and it is built on the Pico Novus blockchain. And these are the things that are coming out that are actually going to make the overall global financial market in the private credit better, in the bond market better, and then you see this, you know, tokenization with the Nasdaq, New York Stock Exchange, and so on and so forth. All this stuff is transpiring. CME, they're looking to go do and have 24-hour trading on their futures contracts, and that's going to be blockchain. A lot of this stuff is happening. A lot of interesting things. The private credit market needs to get involved here, and you know, digital credit note tokens along with the digital asset treasury and the way it's structured and the way it's programmed is ready to rock and roll. And they need to do something there because, you know, look, at the end of the day, you know, digital credit note tokens, again, they're collateralized by a locked digital asset treasury that's transparent. Anyone can see it. It's out there. You can't change it. It's immutable. It's on blockchain. And if you try to change it, it creates a public event. And you're going to be found out, not within a week or two, within seconds, you will be found out. And that's the evolution of it all. That evolution is structural rather than speculation. That's a key thing. You know, this allows for a lender to eliminate collateral, you know, murkiness. Be able to see, this is here, this is clear, this is ready to roll. Regulators, they can observe compliance transparently. They don't even need to contact XYZ person. There's no regulation in place for the private credit markets as should be. This right here is a really, really, really close second, and it keeps everybody in compliance. So when those rules and all that stuff does roll down, well, guess what? They're prepared. Issuers, you know, to access capital without opacity, you know, I mean, it's a good thing when they can do that, okay? And this can avoid, or at least avoid, let's say reduce systemic contagion risk. And we've seen that. We've seen that over time. And, you know, 2008 was the last big thing that transpired. And we should learn from that. So in a world where billions and trillions can be exposed because, well, actually billions, you know, because the same asset was placed twice, three times, four times, having this type of collateral that's programmable may become not just advantageous, but necessary to provide transparency in these markets. The private credit shakeup is unfolding today as we speak. It's not signaling the end of the asset class. Is signaling the end of this unverifiable collateral, which is causing damage to lenders. You have private credit companies, you know, private equity companies that have private credit, big firms that have this, they're doing this, whether it be BlackRock, Blackstone, this one, KKR, whoever the case may be. They're doing it in a way that needs to be done better. And the solution is with digital credit note tokens. The solution is having the DCN plus the DAT, and having this stuff transparent. And again, as I said earlier, this is happening on the Piku Novus blockchain, which is also going to have, at some point, going to have some bridges to other blockchains. But that infrastructure lives on this network. And that's why I'm stressing this, because I know this thing works. Okay, so at the end of the day, and closing, institutions that adopt this transparent on-chain credit architecture, they adopt it early, they just may define the next era of global lending. Go figure. They can change things, not for a minute, not for a second, but in general. And it all happens with blockchain. Okay, now I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I want to go over the private credit markets because a lot of things are going on there. A lot more things are going on there. And I really hope that the private credit players open their eyes and they start looking at blockchain as the vehicle that can help them bring transparency so they can further boom their business. This allows them to do it in the safest way possible. Okay. Now that's it for this episode. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back with you with another episode of Money Never Sleeps as we tackle other areas of finance, crypto, and business in general. Next episode, I may be talking about AI because that's a big hot topic, but I have some opinions with that as well. All right, thank you again, and you guys have a fantastic week.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
You're listening to UCW Radio, in your face.
What is your major malfunction?
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on Money Never Sleeps Radio are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. The host Louis Balavkath and guests of Money Never Sleeps Radio are not licensed financial advisors, and any investment decisions made based on information presented in this podcast are at the listener's own risk. Listeners are encouraged to consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. The podcast hosts and guests do not endorse or recommend any specific investment strategies or products. All investments involve risk, and past performance is not indicative of future results.